The Bible reading this morning is from Daniel, chapter 2, verses 1 to 49, which is on page 882. Daniel, chapter 2. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honour. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realise that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream and I will know that you can interpret it for me." The astrologers answered the king, "There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans." This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, "Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?" Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, "Praise be to the name of God for ever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king." Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, "Do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king and I will interpret his dream for him." Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, "I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means." The king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, "Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?" Daniel replied, "No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about, but there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that pass through your mind as you are lying in bed are these. As your majesty was lying there, your mind turned to things to come, and the revealer of mystery showed you what is going to happen. As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me not because I have greater wisdom than anyone else alive, but so that your majesty may know the interpretation, and so that you may understand what went through your mind." Your majesty looked, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, but not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver and the gold were all broken to pieces and became like chaff on a threshing floor in the summer. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace, but the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream, and now we will interpret it to the king. Your Majesty, you are the King of Kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed all mankind, the beasts of the field and the birds in the sky. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over them all. You are that head of gold. After you, another kingdom will arise, inferior to yours. Next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. Finally, there will be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, for iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things to pieces, so it will crush and break all the others. Just as you saw that the feet and toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. As the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of a mountain, but not by human hands. A rock that broke the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold to pieces. The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true and its interpretation is trustworthy. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honour and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery." Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court.
Thanks, Jenny. That was terrific. We're looking at the book of Daniel, which is a study of the life of a man who is an exile. And he's seeking to live for God in a culture which is at best indifferent to his faith and his convictions, and at worst hostile to his faith and his convictions. So it's a book that has always resonated for Christian people, as we try to live in a culture that doesn't acknowledge the lordship of Jesus. And last week, looking at Daniel chapter 1, we were looking at Daniel's decision to set limits to where he would compromise. And in his case, he chose to draw a boundary when it came to what food he would eat. And this week, we're looking at chapter 2, where the focus really is not so much on Daniel, but on the king under whom he lives, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar is the most powerful man in the world. But when I read this chapter, I think, well, maybe from a religious perspective, he's not so different from many people in modern Australia. That is to say, he seems to have a sort of spiritual intuition. He believes something or other. He believes in a god, or he believes in the gods. He certainly believes there's more going on than you can just see and touch. He doesn't seem to have any fixed set of beliefs, nothing dogmatic, nothing specific. But occasionally you'll see a flash of superstitious behaviour from him where he thinks, oh, what does that mean? Or what should I do about this? Recently I came across this quote from the Australian actor and writer Lex Marinos. And he was reflecting on how he makes sense of life. And as he gets to the end of his reflection, he says this. He says, what part does God play in all this? I don't know. I wear a cross around my neck because I was baptized with it and I like it. I never remove it unless I have to. Does it signify a belief in God? Not necessarily. And yet, on some occasions, when children have been hospitalized and I've been completely helpless to influence their well-being, I prayed to God. Why? Did I really believe that divine intervention would save them? Or was it just a cynical exercise in having all the bases covered? Or was it simply a reaction to the realization of my own mortality? It's a lovely, honest, very self-aware quote. Do I believe in God? Not necessarily, but I don't want to take my cross off, yeah, unless I have to. Or do I believe in prayer? Not so much, but when my kids are in hospital. He has a spiritual intuition. And it may be if you're sitting here this morning and you're not a Christian believer, you think, yes, that's kind of where I am. I know there's more going on, but I wouldn't want to be too specific about it. What Nebuchadnezzar does know is this, that there are some people out there who do seem to be very clued into it, more than he is. And because Nebuchadnezzar is a powerful man, he has a whole bunch of these people on his payroll. They're referred to in the reading as magicians and enchanters and sorcerers and astrologers. And he's kind of got them there. It's a bit like Lex's cross around the neck. He's got them there in case he needs them, though in his deepest heart, he's not sure whether these people are real or fake. And the whole issue comes to a head when he starts experiencing these recurrent and distressing dreams. So it's said in verse 1, in the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. And these dreams trigger his superstitious tendencies. He thinks, this dream, it must mean something. He's right, as it turns out. And he decides to make this dream thing a test case of whether his experts are really in touch with the spirit realm. So as we heard in the reading from verse 2, the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. They came in and stood before the king. He said to them, I've had a dream that troubles me. I want to know what it means. The astrologers answered, may the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream. We will interpret it. He said, this is what I've firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I'll have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. That was kind of how they operated. That's good governance in 7th century BC. But if you tell me my dream and explain it, you'll receive from me gifts and rewards and great honour. So tell me the dream and interpret it. Once more they replied, let the king tell his servants the dream and we'll interpret it. The king said, I'm certain you're trying to gain time. You realise that this is what I've firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there's only one penalty for you. You've conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then tell me the dream and I will know that you can interpret it for me. And his experts are completely exasperated. They say, look, that's not how it works. God doesn't actually communicate things. God doesn't actually speak. He doesn't deliberately tell us things. We kind of look for clues that we interpret. But we're not messengers. God isn't actually trying to tell us things. The astrologers answer the king, there's no one on earth who could do what the king asks. That's verse 10. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans. Nebuchadnezzar is nonplussed. This made the king so angry and furious, he decided that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. It's very interesting just to reflect on Nebuchadnezzar as a test case, and it's a bit of a reminder, I think, that just because people have a spiritual intuition doesn't necessarily mean that they're on the right track. They're onto something, but you don't want to get too excited about it. Nebuchadnezzar believes in the God or the gods, but that doesn't mean that he and we are talking necessarily about the same sorts of things. You know, Lex Marinos, for example, he believes in covering his bases. You wouldn't want to say, oh, Lex is on his way to faith in Jesus. But he realizes there's more going on than meets the eye. Nebuchadnezzar's experts believe in the gods. But plainly their understanding is at odds with the God that Daniel believes in. Daniel believes in a God who is present and who is active in human affairs and who not only plans and directs the future, but who speaks clearly, deliberately, unambiguously to his people. And perhaps the clearest indication that Daniel's God is different from the gods that they believe in is that he does something which seems very obvious to us, but apparently not to them. Namely, he prays. Verse 17, then Daniel returned to his house, explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And when his prayer is answered, Daniel gives this wonderful exclamation of praise, which is a very theological statement, if I can use that label. You listen to his words and you see not just that he believes in the possibility of a God, like Lex Marinos, or like a lot of Australians. Oh, you know, they wouldn't want to rule it out. Daniel believes in one true God who runs and rules the world and who communicates intentionally. So it says, verse 19, during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. Listen to Daniel's account of God. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. It's not just a more detailed version of the Babylonian gods. It's a specific, relational, a powerful, engaged, speaking God that Daniel knows. And so he goes to Nebuchadnezzar on behalf of his God who speaks and who rules. Verse 26, the king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it? Daniel replied, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he is asked about, but there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. See, the Babylonians believe in a God who doesn't reveal mysteries. There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the days to come. There are two very important things there. Not just that there happens to be a God who speaks, but the content of what God has to say is important. He directs the future. He has shown the king what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the vision that passed through your mind as you were lying in the bed are these. And he starts to describe to Nebuchadnezzar the things that the king has shared with no one. It must have been an awesome moment for Nebuchadnezzar as Daniel starts to describe the great statue that the king had seen in his dream with its different layers from the gold head and going down, and this disturbing appearance of this supernatural stone, the violent impact with the statue and the colossal collapse to dust, and then the wind that does away with all trace that the statue was ever there. And the stone itself remains and becomes an immense and everlasting and universal mountain. Amazing for Nebuchadnezzar. And Daniel presses on, of course, to the meaning of the dream. And his interpretation is this, that Nebuchadnezzar's great international empire is merely the latest in a finite succession of human empires which will come to a permanent end and be replaced by God's everlasting kingdom. And reading this as Christians, we recognise this as a prophetic parable for the coming rule of Christ. If you know your New Testament, this will ring bells of Jesus' own teaching about the way that the kingdom of God starts as something small, like a seed, but goes on to become a vast tree. Or Jesus' own teaching about himself, the Christ, as the stone that is initially rejected but becomes the crucial cornerstone of the building. Or as he says in Luke 20, everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces and anyone on whom it falls will be crushed. Or you think of the voices in Revelation chapter 11 which say, the kingdom of this world has become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever. And this is an important message for everyone, but there could hardly be a more crucial message for someone like Nebuchadnezzar to hear, because he believed himself to be establishing an everlasting and worldwide empire. And so this dream and its meaning should have been a crucial intervention, a humbling perspective setter for him. And it's saying that anyone who's committed to any of those worldly kingdoms is backing the wrong horse. They're all going to be done away with. Nebuchadnezzar's entire project, with all his pretension and all his absolute power over the lives of others, it's all destined to become dust scattered on the wind. The dream really is it's a gift of God's grace to Nebuchadnezzar, a warning or an invitation to humility and to submission. And the message really shouldn't be wasted on us, as different as we are from him. Because it's very easy for us in our own small way, for our lives to be ruled by the same sense of self-preoccupation, just in an ordinary everyday way. To find ourselves energetically working towards things that are ultimately destined to become dust, rather than working towards the kingdom that will replace all those things and never end. Or to put this another way, even though we hold onto God in our lives as Christian believers, almost without realizing it, we can end up looking for ways that God will fit into the story of our lives rather than the ways that our lives should be fitting into God's story. That was the message of the dream for Nebuchadnezzar. And we see this, I see this myself, we see this in our prayers, or we see this in the areas that we seek for guidance and for help. I'm not trying to tease anyone, but our prayers can often degenerate into things like, God, please help me find a parking spot. I'm so late. Or, God, please send me someone to marry. Or, God, please help me have a family. But of course, those are things on our hearts. And yet, it's trying to draw God in to the ongoing story of my life, rather than saying, where do I fit in God's greater story? When we say, where does God fit in the story of my life? That's the same question Nebuchadnezzar was asking. That's why he employed all these diviners and astrologers. He wanted to make sure that God was part of his picture. We need to live with a clear sense of what's going to wind up as dust and what's going to last forever. And I think it's actually not a hard thing to do, to look at our lives and say, in terms of the things that I'm investing in right now, what are the things that are doomed to become dust? We can't bypass those things. They're the stuff of everyday life. And what are the things that are going to last forever? See, here's what Christians know. Christians know that the great statue and all those empires, we know that these things are ultimately a great dust cloud in waiting. And so we know better than to commit ourselves to those things. And we have more than just a parable or a vision to go. We have the resurrection of Jesus. In other words, the literal and real world fulfillment of that vision. The start of the coming kingdom. The stone cut out, not by human hands. It's Jesus who teaches us to live and to pray, may your kingdom come. Not how magnificent these kingdoms are, but to say to God, may your kingdom come. May your will be done on earth, that is here and now, as it is in heaven, as it will be on the day when the mountain fills the earth. We live for the mountain, not the dust cloud. Well, Daniel says these things to Nebuchadnezzar. God does indeed speak, and here's what he has to say. He rules. You must submit. What's Nebuchadnezzar's response? It seems entirely wasted on him. I mean, he's very pleased, but his reaction seems to be, at last, I have a public servant who's not a charlatan. This guy's the real deal. That's as far as he goes. And as we'll see later on in the book of Daniel, he has to get a more severe message from God to get his attention. Verse 46, King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel, paid him honour, and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, surely your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, the revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery. The king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. Notice he says, the God of gods. That is to say, he hasn't fundamentally changed his understanding of the spirit realm. It's as if he's saying, oh, at last I found a God that works. In our parlance, it's like he's found a good app. He says, oh yes, here's a good one for interpreting dreams. He hasn't heard that God is speaking to you. And he's got something to say, namely that he rules. And so Nebuchadnezzar neither listens nor submits. It's the message that's brought to fullest expression in the gospel, actually. Listen to the start of the book of Hebrews. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but in these last days he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things and through whom he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had made purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. God speaks and he rules. God is not an app. Being a Christian is not a life hack. It's not a way of getting things done. Being a Christian is to live for the one who at the cost of his own life has made purification for sins and who's the ruler of the coming kingdom. Our musos are going to come and lead us. We're going to turn this into prayer as we sing to our God, may your kingdom come.